Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Marcus Bush, 28 years of combination experience, second generation firefighter, deputy chief of operations with Lynchburg Fire Department in Virginia. From the young age of two, Marcus spoke the word fire truck, and that's all he ever wanted to do. He was able to get into the public safety field, but wanted no part of having to do law enforcement and firefighting at the same time. The goal was always fire. Once he was able to achieve that dream, he had one goal, and that was to always make progress. Marcus spoke the truth and preached the truth when it came to leadership and the difference between training and drilling. I hope you all enjoy this interview as much as I did. With that, I present Marcus Bush.
Glad to be on. I'm Marcus Bush. I'm a 28-year student. It's really important to emphasize that. You can't become a chief officer and still be a good chief officer if you're not a student. So I'm a 28-year student of the game, of the fire service, and really of just being a servant in general. I got into the fire service really in 1995 with some of my uncles, Levi Green and my cousin Carrie, really in 95, but really started getting really serious about it in 1997 when I joined the Belvedere Fire Department, which is in Belvedere, South Carolina, right outside of North Augusta, South Carolina, which is near or neighboring or bordering to Augusta, Georgia. Spent several years there, worked for North Augusta Public Safety. If you're not familiar with public safety departments do police and fire. I did not have the desire to be what they call a public safety officer, which is a dual role position. I really just wanted to be a firefighter. So from there, from North Augusta, and actually I left out a whole different space, and I don't really want to disrespect. I worked for Aiken Public Safety for about 8 months as what they call a cadet firefighter while I was going to college. Figured out college wasn't for me, at least not at the time. And then so I moved on to North Augusta. And then from North Augusta, I went to my first fully paid fire department, which was Somerville, South Carolina. From Somerville, I went to Charleston, South Carolina, where I ended up getting injured during recruit school. According to the doctors, almost lost my life because my kidney started to shut down and I went into renal failure. They still can't explain it to this day. So I was a Charleston firefighter for about a year. But never, actually made it out of recruit school. It's unfortunate. Then I went to a department called St. Andrews Fire Department and spent pretty much almost 20 years before I went to Harrisonburg, Virginia for a little while as the chief of technical services. I'm an operations guy. So some things opened up here in Lynchburg where I currently am, where I'm the deputy chief of operations. And like I said, I'm celebrating my 28th year in the fire service.
Okay. So listening to your intro, it sounds like you are a generational firefighter.
Yeah, first generation.
Well, I mean, you mentioned uncles, that you had uncles in the fire service.
Yeah. So it's kind of uncles through marriage. So I guess, yeah, I mean, technically, yes. I guess, okay. Yeah. I didn't ever think about it that way. So thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah, no, definitely. That lets you know I'm paying attention for sure.
Yeah. Oh no, you're definitely dialed in, and I called them up and give them some. Yeah, all right.
Okay. So, with watching them and what they did, was it immediately knowing, or did you have aspirations of doing something else?
So I can honestly say, and God bless my Northern Star, my grandfather. He loved to tell people since 2 years old, I knew what I was going to do. He said I would run around the house, I guess you can edit it if you want, but of course kids try to say fire truck, but he said I would run around saying firefucker, at 2 years old until I could pronounce it. So I've always had that desire. It just it was actually cemented in me when I was around 10 years old. My first house where we lived in New Ellington, South Carolina, I was in elementary school. My house was across the field from our elementary school playground. And I saw smoke and fire coming from my house. And so I watched the volunteer department show up and do an outstanding job. They saved a good majority, of our house, but of course there was enough damage where it just had to be. We were able to get a lot of belongings out, a lot of a lot of personal stuff. So that kind of gave me my understanding of what I believe the fire service to be, what it should be, and what it still should be. And which is, Kurt Vonnegut once said that the most stirring symbol of man's humanity is the fire engine. And what that meant to me, and having experienced that in my life, was in a moment where I watched my grandparents and my parents feel like their dignity was stripped from them by going in and being able to retrieve those valuables. It gave a little bit of life. It gave a little bit of spark, put a little bit of, love, back in them at a moment that was just one of the worst moments of their life. So I never lose sight of that's what I believe Kurt Vonnegut's quote to be true. And I believe that that is the impetus for what how we should be delivering service to our public, to our citizens.
Okay, I love that. All right. So once, obviously, when you were young, it triggered, you knew this is what you wanted to do. So I'm going to kind of skip a couple departments that you were on, and I want to go into St. Andrews. So once you got to St. Andrews, did you have to do any sort of recruit class, academy to come fully on board?
No, I didn't have to do an academy. I was a what they call direct hire. St. Andrews had, has always had a program where they would send people to the South Carolina Fire Academy or have a direct hire program. I was a direct hire. I really, unfortunately, and I do say unfortunately, I never really had the value of being in a true recruit class. That is something that if I had to do it all over again, that I would absolutely do. I know some people that have gone through recruit classes say they wouldn't do it, but I absolutely would, because I believe that there are some solid lessons that come from that, and I absolutely understand the value, the relationships, the just so many positive things that I believe come out of recruit school. So, but I was a direct hire.
Okay. So with that, what was your first assignment?
So my first assignment was I got put on what we called Truck 3, which was a van style delivery style van that ran every call in our district. For years and years and years, when I got hired at St. Andrews in 2003, formally, St. Andrews only ran maybe 800 calls a year. Because St. Andrews is located in the West Ashley section of Charleston, which is not too far from the Sofa Superstore. But I was on that vehicle, and then from subsequently until starting to get promoted, I rode that vehicle for a long time, and that was, the benefit there.
Okay. With that, at what point did you decide to start moving up the ranks and why?
So that is actually a great question. So I started there in 2003. I really just wanted to truly, I had not to sound cliche or anything like that, but I really had no desire other than just being a firefighter. All I wanted to do was fight fire, and just do what we do. And I had a captain come to me one day and he says, "Listen, you're getting a little more bossy. You're really starting to get on my nerves." And he said, I think he said, "I think you need, your own house, or you need more responsibility." He says, I think you should test, for engineer and, take on some more responsibility. So you could at least act officer, things like that. So Took the engineer's test, ended up second on the list. Wasn't slated to be promoted. Somebody left, and so ended up getting promoted as well. Enjoyed being an engineer, but I really didn't like it. I didn't I don't have a zest or a zeal to drive a vehicle. Like a lot of people, the only time I could say that I really enjoyed being an engineer is when we actually went to a full-time truck company. For the longest time, St. Andrews was a part of that. Had a bunch of DIY, engine companies. So everything was done out of the engine company, and the ladder truck that was there was just there for ISO points. And it didn't get responded to calls, things like that. But once we went to a full-time truck company, I can honestly say that I did enjoy being an engineer then, when we went to a full-time truck company. Good placement, being able to do, go up and do roof work and be involved in the fire scene. I enjoyed that, but I still had a desire to get out of the driver's seat and get back to the next seat.
And how long were you an engineer before you decided to move up to company officer?
So I want to say 3 years. I was an engineer approximately, 3 years. At St. Andrews, they don't use the lieutenant position. They go by the ranking of senior and junior captain. So when you're a junior captain, you just get a silver badge. When you're a senior captain, you get a gold badge. So essentially I was promoted to lieutenant, in 2009.
And with that, what does leadership look like to you, and what kind of leader did you want to be?
So our leadership always looked like to me is I think you should, number one, and this is going to be hard for some people to understand, but I really want people to understand this. When there's leadership and there's management. And what I really want people to understand is managers lack vision and managers manage policies and procedures and how things go. Leaders are never without vision. And that's hard for some people to understand. That's hard for them to accept. But where we go with that, you need both types. For me, I learned how to that I needed both styles. But my leadership, what I wanted to do was I wanted to be demonstrative in building people up. I love seeing people succeed. That's actually how I met Alex, with him as a junior, and just I love seeing people succeed. I love seeing people win, and that was the culture that I wanted around me. That was the culture that I was going to build. That was a culture that I had. You didn't come to my table in my firehouse dogging people, trashing people without then getting it turned on you and asking, what have you done? The people you're complaining about, the process that you're complaining about, what have you done to make it better? And if you haven't made it better or done anything to make it better, then just shut up.
But it's, Now, can you explain a little bit on what you mean with that we need both? Because for me, I'd actually rather have like a leader, but I understand there are managers out there, but could you explain a little bit about both?
Absolutely. That is a great question. So your leadership is really it's not everybody tries to define it. Leadership is an action. Leadership is being demonstrative. Leadership is just very much like the picture that floats around of it says boss and leader, where the boss is sitting back and being carried, and where the leader is actually out front. Doing the things, putting in the sweat equity and all of that. The reason I say that managers are needed is because sometimes leaders can get very, very out there. There was times that I absolutely, to be frank, that I lost my damn mind, and somebody had to pull me back in on the processes and how we do things. So as a leader, you do need to learn how to work within the policies and procedures and things that you have, and learn how to manage that, learn how to manage your firehouse properly. Because what happens is sometimes you can be a, such an amazing leader that the skill sets that you forget to give your people, particularly talking about the fire service, is the paperwork side. Because honestly, and so 95% of what we do, or maybe even greater, are the soft skills that sometimes leaders, I won't say often lack in, but tend to lack in because it's just not important to them. The people are important to them and service is important, but the other side of what those leaders are expected to do, build plans for people, do those type of things are skills that managers often possess, that they have that strong managerial sense. But leaders forget that they have to be built into people as well. So I hope that cleaned it up for you.
No, absolutely. No, I'm envisioning that. Okay. All right. So with how long did you wait before going from lieutenant then to like senior lieutenant or captain?
So, and yeah, I mean, I was technically, a junior captain. That's the term that's used there. Senior captain, I really want to say it was honestly about a year. There was an opening that, that came open. And to be honest, sometimes when I won't say I knew, but I had people that I respected that I listened to that was like, listen, ain't no better teacher than experience. Get your butt out there, test for this position and make it happen. So it happened in 2010, and then in 2014, I became a battalion chief.
Oh, okay. All right. With being with becoming a battalion chief, was it difficult for you to see that you're not, I'm not going to say you're not riding, well, you're not riding the rig, you're usually driving yourself, but did you see yourself as part of the guys or no?
So that was, I mean, again, that's a great question. I think it's a little bit different for everybody. I saw myself as one of the guys, and that was probably one of my greatest downfalls. And the reason I would say that is because the more officer you become, the more you have to take care of your people, but at the same time, the more you have to separate being the adult in the room. And the longer you attach yourself to, hey, I still like a lot of battalion chiefs, a lot of chiefs, period. Oh man, I miss riding the rig, da 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 da. But as you're focusing on that, you're also losing the sight that you're supposed to have. And I want to put this in perspective for anybody that listens to this, podcast. And I know you have a lot of followers, so folks, hear me on this. You have a responsibility to someone's wife, husband, daughter, son, uncle. You are saying you have the skill sets to help them get back to them. So that is your greatest responsibility. Stop looking at people as firefighters and just simple and plain. No, their greatest roles in life is being mother, father, husband, daughter. Those are the greatest roles, and those are the responsibilities that you have to take on. And as you take on the greater leadership roles, you are responsible for being the adult in the room and making people do things that they really don't want to do.
I mean, I cannot argue with that at all. And I'm assuming you got to that point by learning through experience, through trials and tribulations.
Oh, Danny, here's the thing. I did so much dumb shit. We could make so many t-shirts, from it. And, and that's how I tell people. That's why I am the way that I am today. And I sometimes I got a file to prove it, that sometimes you get a little out of hand. You do some really just dumb, ignorant stuff. But at the end of the day, as you move up, you are responsible. You have to be that adult in the room to embrace the fact that when you sign up for that officer test and you take it, you are saying that you have the necessary skills. And that you will also make sure make sure the folks that are listening to this, you also have an obligation to continue to grow those skills. You don't get a bat, you don't get the bugle and all of those things and just say, well, I learned everything. No, hell no, you far from it. You are far from it. The moment you decide to take on a greater responsibility, there's a whole bunch that when they say you don't know what you don't know, there's a whole bunch that you don't know. And it is a continuing learning process, and there is just so much more.
No, that's true because it's been my experience through talking to lots of folks that when individuals get to that rank of any sort of chief officer, when they add seniority on top of it, it's listen, I've done it. I don't need to do it anymore. I have all the certification. Like you could take all these classes to get certified. They put your name on it. They stamp it. Yes, but that doesn't mean your education stops. But we have some that's how they see it. It's I've reached the pinnacle. I'm here. I no longer have to worry about this, that, or the other.
Well, I can tell you, if you're that officer that's listening to this podcast, you're that chief officer. I got 28 years in, and I'm telling you right now, I've seen some things, but I ain't seen near enough. I can never do enough. And as one of my favorite groups says out there, the International Association of Black Professional Firefighters, all that I am and all that I owe, I live eternally in the red. If you don't feel like you owe it to your folks to be better every day, if you don't feel like you owe it to yourself, your commitment to your family, your community, get out. I'm plainly saying it, get out. You do not know enough. You will never know enough. You will never be the best, and that's okay. As long as you're, I just had a great interaction with one of my folks this morning where we met for coffee and just chilled out and talked about life, fatherhood, all kind of stuff. But one of the things he said to me that was really applicable to this conversation, just keep making progress. You don't have to be perfect. Just keep making progress. That's simply all I'm saying. None of us will ever be perfect. I'm a strong believer in faith. There's only one being that's ever been a physical in man form, and that was Jesus. And that's the only perfect person that will ever walk the earth. But just keep making progress. That's just keep making progress. But the moment you think that you have nothing to progress on, you are a danger to yourself. You're in danger to anybody that you're in charge of, or because in the end, we fight for each other. You know, when somebody doesn't, when somebody doesn't do their job, I'm a big advocate. I'm a truck guy. I was on a truck for, for 10 years. I mean, loved every minute of it. When we didn't do our job by positioning correctly, by getting ground ladders, by getting quick searches, by getting ventilation, by doing those things, we were breaking down the progress and the success of the team. So if you're not progressing and getting, better every day as a battalion chief, if I'm not, my boss used to get on me because he would do a test and he would call me at 2 o'clock in the morning to see whether I was up or not. And the likelihood on shift, I was up because that was my time where I could watch videos or I could go back and I could listen to my audios from fires. One of the greatest lessons I learned, I sounded horrible on a fire and I actually did a horrible job. And it's being real with yourself and saying, that was some shit. And I'm gonna fix that shit. Because it was just what it was. Ain't no soft way to put it. It was shit. You
No,
know?
I love it. I love it. I mean, self-reflection. I mean, I know I'm not perfect. I always admit to that. I'm always trying to work on my strengths and weaknesses. We all have it, but at least I am comfortable in saying that, and I am every day I try to do something to improve myself every day. But like you said, it's those small wins, those small collective progress wins right there.
Yeah, so and talking about making progress, the other thing that I really enjoy talking about, and I used to teach about this a lot as far as company officers. So we get caught up in trying to do so many big things. And I learned this from Jim McCormick and going out to the Fire Department Training Network, which if you've never been, I highly recommend that everybody goes. That's like the Disneyland, for firefighters. It is in the small details that you become the better firefighter. Meaning, just in the morning when you check off your rig. I know that there's probably a driver assigned to the rig, but who actually uses the nozzle? How
Yeah.
many fire how many firefighters actually check their own nozzle? How many firefighters actually understand the type of nozzle that they have? How many firefighters, what would you do if you didn't notice or didn't check it? You're in a fire, you bled the line, there was no issue, you get inside the fire, you get to the seat of the fire, you get ready to open up, and the bell breaks. What are you gonna do?
That's a deep question.
You know what I'm saying? Do you just have to retreat? Do you get your ass burned? Like, what happens? And what are you know what how are you prepared for that? What's in your pocket to overcome that? So, it's just, things just it how do you position to it's things simple reps such as okay, we use them, I'm just saying we use a modified Minuteman load.
Okay.
So sprains, and pulls are, I always have to slow down because I try to, it's kind of like saying LMNOP
Okay, okay.
instead of saying LMNO. But those are the number one injuries. But yet, firefighters, we do not break hose deployment up into smaller segments. How should our body be positioned? Where should our feet be? Where should our hands be? Why are our hands where they are? Why do they need to be there? Why do our feet need to be there? Where does it need to be on our shoulder? And all of these things are important because, Danny, you're probably what, 6 feet?
Six one.
Well, guess what? I'm 5'3". So the shoulder load, putting that load on my shoulder is going to be in a different location. It's going to hang very different. Our arm spans are very different. And so it's training on those little nuances, not just, oh, can I get the line off? Well, can we just get the first part of it right? Can we get the load actually on our shoulder and in our hands appropriately? And then we can worry about reaching back and getting it off and, doing those things. I also see it, with ground ladders. People just generically put ground ladders on, on their rigs. Why? Set your ground ladders up, for success. You know how your dist you know how your city is set up. Like, does it work with how it's set up, or do some in a lot of places we began to ride with the extension ladder on the outside versus on the inside
Inside.
because a lot of places that we went to, we knew what, the heights and lengths and things like that. And the first portable ladder that needed to come off was the extension ladder. It's the little nuances in everything. Stop trying to do the big training sessions. Stop trying to do seven training sessions and just have quality sessions that are impactful for the members in small doses so they get it. And by God, get back to training and not just drilling because people do not understand there's semantics in both of them and they really matter.
Okay.
And where I'm going with that is when you're training to get better. A drill is a culmination of a bunch of little trainings. And anybody that's been in the military, did you serve in the military?
I have not, no.
So, but for anybody that served in the military, they get a 30-day training schedule, and it's a bunch of little things that they do for 30 days that then it results in a drill. And that drill is the culmination to see if they acquired all of those skills properly. But in the fire service, we drill, 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 but then we don't understand why people never gain competency. Because when you go and drill somebody, learning is not taking place. These people are scared shitless that they're going to mess up in front of their peers because there hasn't been training sessions. They've always been drill sessions.
Okay. No, that's some. I'm thinking about that. That's some real shit right there. For real.
And I'm telling you this because I made this mistake as an officer. Hey, let's go to drill. And so what it said to my firefighters was, oh shit, he's gonna go, we're being tested on something. Now, I never said it was a test,
Right.
but the word drill implies that you cannot make a mistake. You can't,
Yeah.
it implies something different. When I started saying, hey, let's go train, and we would actually go train and we would break things down into smaller detail and so on and so forth, man, we exponentially went through the roof as a group together because nobody was afraid quasi to fail because
Right.
they were at training.
Right.
They felt comfortable asking the questions because they were at training. Shh, ain't nobody asking no questions at drill. Who want to look stupid at drill?
Yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah. No, that okay. Okay. That makes a whole lot of sense. Where did you end up as far as rank with St. Andrews before deciding to leave?
So at St. Andrews, I mean the term was changed, but I technically retired or left as an assistant chief, which was a shift commander over the whole shift. Really wasn't a big deal. Like I don't want to make it, any more than it, than it was. But St. Andrews is its own entity. So I was responsible for the 23 square miles that our public service district encompassed, and for the entire shift. So we had four stations, five companies. Ended up when I left, I loved how it was. We had, I'm going to say a dirty word that pisses people off, but we had a quint. And guess what? I loved it. And I'll get into that in just a minute, but we had three engine companies. We had a quint and we had a heavy rescue. And we were damn good. And they're still doing a damn good job. Even in my retirement, I'm a very proud alumni of St. Andrews. But
Well,
that's where I ended up.
to me, quint isn't a dirty word. The problem is we have firefighters who, whether it's due to this is the trend, this is the way the comments are going, they tend to look at it as like ill, like individuals on quints are confused. They don't know what they need to do. But what they fail to realize is not every jurisdiction or organization in the United States can be like the FDNY, where they have true truck companies, because the way the firehouses are strategically placed, everybody is on top of each other within minutes. You have to, there are areas, rural, urban, suburban, depending on, they have to strategically place these apparatus where they need to. Now, me, I ride a quint. We have a Not we have a Pierce mid mount. Okay, it has 300 gallons of water. We have two cross lays because we have a first due where we are by ourselves in this station. So like it makes sense to have we have commercial areas, which is why we have the aerial, but we also have a first due. So I think the important thing is if you're on a quint, you need to learn both aspects. You need to be able to pull hose, understand pulling hose. You need to make sure you get a water supply first and foremost if you're driving, because you only have 300 gallons. And the last time when I did my drill, it was a minute and 26 seconds, I think, before I ran out of water with 300 gallons. So you got to be pretty quick to get it, or your nozzleman has to be very frugal with the water until you get it established. But no, I don't think it's a dirty word. There are departments that are very successful with having a quint. They can't afford to buy a ladder truck and not have a pump.
So, I mean, you said it very correctly. I mean, this is where the manager part comes in. It's a little bit of leadership and, and the manager, making sure that the leadership and the manager have to work together when you have quints in your department to make sure that the training on both sides of the coin, making sure that your policies, are in place. And that they're, and when I say this, I truly mean this. And some people say, oh, you're just using, terms. No, if you don't have street smart policies, then you're messing up. All the other verbal junk, judo, all of that is just goes out the window. And firefighters, they don't know it, they don't remember it, and honestly, they really don't give a crap about it. Have street smarts policies that are very, hey, this is your so just what you said when we first started before automatic aid was in Charleston, and I think everybody knows our automatic aid model in Charleston, but before automatic aid started, the way that it worked when we went to a full truck company was when truck one, or now it's called ladder 301, when ladder 301 was dispatched to first do fire, it acted as an engine and as a first do fire. The rescue, which was housed with it, would then take over all truck company operations when they arrived. So if the aerial was needed, they would do, vertical ventilation via the aerial, whatever, but that would be the Ladder 301's crew would be the first engine company, and the rescue company would just take over all, truck company operations before we went into auto aid. So that was heavily established. So there, like you said, there's no confusion. If you're in your first due and you arrive, to that fire, you're the engine company, and the rescue company that's right behind you will take care of all the truck company functions that, so, and everything fell out that way. Now, once we went to automatic aid, here's the part that I loved being a Quint. We got to go to the damn fire regardless. And here's the other thing I like to encourage people. We did such a good job as a group. Oftentimes, even though we got dispatched as an engine, the reward for hard work and not talking about it. As Michael Jordan once said, he said, you can't talk about your game. You got to show it. You can't talk to be the best. You just got to show your game and let people do the talking. Well, my company, very proud of them. We would show up. And we would get rewarded because the chief would be like, ah, yeah, I know y'all were dispatched as engine, but I really need y'all to do truck work. Do you know how flattering that is to go somewhere as an engine company and that chief say, nah, I gotta have you do truck work? That's a testament to the work, that your company's doing. So the Quint just got us to the fire regardless, whether we were going as a truck or an engine or whatever, it got us to the fire. And so I don't care what you call it, just call me to the fire. That's ultimately what we wanted to do, right? What we want to do is get to the fire.
And the system in place now with St. Andrews, I know there really within that area, there is no such thing as borders anymore.
There's
It's
no more borders.
whatever is closest unit gets the call and gets to the
Literally.
scene. And I'm sure that makes it even easier now.
And the way that the St. Andrews Station 1 is positioned, I mean, it is uniquely positioned to go any and everywhere. And it used to be amazing. I don't know how the guys, feel about it now because I don't get to go back home very often, but it was during those times, it was amazing. Like you went anywhere and everywhere, anywhere from 10 to 25 runs a shift, and there's just nothing but goodness.
All right. So, how did your current position pop up?
So, I was serving as the technical services chief in Harrisonburg. To be honest, that wasn't going, really well. I'm not a technical services, type chief. I'm not a when I tell you about the leadership and managerial skills is something that I had to acquire. And that's why I say, teach it early, learn, teach folks early that side of it, because that is the side of the job that, you're going to do most often. But I'm not an office chief. I'm not, I'm a I want to be out there, loading hose, just seeing what's going on, being in command. I enjoy that aspect as well. So I was actually, I had, to be frank, I had separated from Harrisonburg because of some situations there. and the job came open. I saw it. I was like, I actually had like five people call me because I was going to get out of the fire service. I was like, you know what? I've done 20 some years. You know, I think that was, at that point I'd had 25 years total because I've been here for 3 years. Yeah. So had 25 years. I was like, man, it's a good career. I just got my life insurance license, all that kind of stuff. I was like, eh, I'm done. Like five people called me like, man, you see this Lynchburg job, man? Like that is, they are screaming for you. And I'm like, ain't nobody screaming for me, man. You know, like there's like, no, you got. And so I checked it out and I read it. I was like, oh man, this really is good. I'd like to, try my hand at, getting a job. I applied, went through the process. And now, here I sit. Our organization is now, in totality, 219 strong, with 210 of those personnel being in operations. And so, just, proud of a lot of things we're doing. We have made some significant changes over the last few years, increasing our one of the things that we really needed to do. The members have we put a group together for them to decide the consistent attack load that we were going to have across the department. Because when I got there, every engine, every officer, meaning the senior officer in every station, kind of decided what load there was going to be on the engines, and just so a lot of little different things. But those, again, those little things add up. They create frustration, which leads to whether, chiefs, please hear me. The little things add up and they cost you retention. And if you don't have retention, you do not have recruitment. It's the times at the bar when a firefighter is talking about their department and stuff like that, when people decide it ain't the videos that you show. It's those going to conferences, it's the different conversations that firefighters have off to the side that's where the recruitment takes place. And if you're struggling to retain your firefighters, if your firefighters don't believe in the department, don't believe in what you're doing, if you haven't empowered them or found ways to make them connected, and this is a big saying for me, everybody just wants to know where their me fits into the we. But it's hard for people to find their me in the we when it's not being demonstrated from the top that there's a we. When the top demonstrates that there's me, nobody believes that there's a we. And so that's just some real, some real stuff. Maybe I'll put that on a t-shirt.
Dude, I mean, like, honestly, I got a little bit of goosebumps. It was, yeah. I don't know what organization, I don't know what firefighter doesn't want to be a part of something within their department. I understand rank can play a factor because, from what I understand, talking to lots of people, if you want change, if you want to affect change, you need to promote, because if you're not sitting in the room with these individuals, you're unfortunately sometimes you don't get a say so. While I understand it, I also don't agree with it, because you have passionate firefighters who just want to be that. Some of us don't want to go into administration. And I understand if you don't go into administration, then don't be surprised if the person that you didn't want up there is fired. Like, I get it. I get that wholeheartedly. But I love the fact that you mentioned it's a collective thing. Getting buy-in should be getting buy-in from your entire department, not a select group of people.
So you are 100% correct. I am one of those ones. I am so tired of people telling people that it's not okay for them to be, a career firefighter for 30 or 35 years. BS. You know what I'm saying? That is, I'm calling BS from my position. I've seen a lot of things over the years, and yes, I feel very comfortable, speaking about this. Chief officers are responsible for making sure that their officers make sure that people like yourself and others who have a desire to be those senior firefighters that absolutely matter, that really mentor and create the basis for the whole fire department, are having the tools that they need and are able to participate and spread their knowledge and share their knowledge and cultivate the type of culture that you really want in an organization, which is everybody can talk about servant leadership, and that's what a lot of people do. And I'm gonna piss some people off when I say this, but most of you folks out there that are talking about servant leadership, that's all you doing is talking, because most servant leaders don't have a lot of time to talk about it because they're busy serving. Servant leadership came from Jesus. And did Jesus spend a lot of time talking, or did he spend a lot of time walking? And the answer was that he spent a lot of time walking. Servant leadership cannot be talked to death. It has to be a demonstrative action. When you tell your people you're going to do something, do it. Or if you can't do it, be responsible enough to go back to your folks and say, hey, this is what I wanted to do. I'm unable to do it right now, but we will revisit it in the future. Or if you say you're going to do something, then make sure it gets finished all the way through. And look for those people who aren't normally engaged and ask them, and off to the side in a private manner, is there some reason that you're not engaging within the organization? Is there something happening going on? Get to the root cause of why said person or persons are not engaging in your organization. It is everybody's responsibility, because everybody, when they get hired, they say the same, I'll do whatever it is you ask me to do, blah, 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 blah. They all say the same crap. But then somewhere down the line, 2, 3 years later, you can meet a 2-year firefighter that now sounds like a 20-year veteran because they've taken on everybody else's trauma. Because in the firehouse, what's been allowed to happen is everybody's talking about their trauma. This person sucks. That person sucks. This person did this to me. And then that person internalizes it. And then it becomes their trauma and they start carrying it. And that becomes your culture. Like, that literally becomes your culture.
That's heavy. That's heavy. I'll say
So,
that.
what I encourage all departments to do is what I've encouraged in my own department, and I try to do it through leadership. When you get hired, and I'm encouraging departments to do this, I don't care what system they use, disc profiling, whether they use Clifton strengths or whatever, we should be learning how to communicate with an employee, our employees' desires, their needs. How to communicate with them, what's the wrong way to communicate with them, how to motivate them. There are sciences and there are abilities to have an idea. It's not, nothing's ever absolute, but at least you have an idea of how this individual ticks. You can t Most people are angry and frustrated and don't know how to be the best me in the we, because they don't even know their damn self. They don't. That is the greatest frust We get most frustrated with people and project things onto people because we don't know ourselves and we're trying to figure out ourselves. And that same person that we're getting frustrated with, they're trying to figure out themselves too. And while we're both trying to figure out ourselves, we're frustrating the hell out of each other at the same time.
No, I mean that's no. It's definitely something to think about. I know for sure for me, it's definitely got the wheel spinning. I do want to ask. I don't know much about the area, so I always like to have the guests talk about the current department that they're in. So with that being said, can you tell us how many stations? You already said personnel, but like just a little bit of information. It doesn't have to be 100% accurate on the numbers.
Yeah, no, so I'd love to shout out Lynchburg. So, Lynchburg Fire Department, we are, like I said, in totality 219 strong, 210 in suppression, 8 stations currently operating, the 9th station being built. We operate 8 engine companies, 6 medic units, two ladder companies with a tiller on slated for delivery in 2027. So we're bringing a tiller back to the city. We had it years and years ago, and then it went away, but it's coming back. So two ladder trucks with the third will come in service when Station 9 opens. We expect Station 9 to open probably late summer, kind of fall of 2026. So that third ladder company will be coming into place. So we have three ladder companies and then, excuse me, and one heavy rescue company. We run two battalion chiefs and then we have an EMS supervisor.
Okay. And are your personnel ALS or BLS certified?
So, sorry, I should have went through all of
No,
that.
you're
So,
good. You're good.
we have ALS. We are transitioning into where our AEMTs will be able to step up and do more ALS, protocols, so that that takes a load off of paramedics because that the paramedics are becoming a dime a dozen. Also, with that we have a full scale hazmat team. We also have a we are Virginia's Division Three USAR team, which goes all the way from Lynchburg down to the North Carolina line on the 64 side. So, basically, going all the way down through Reidsville, Greensboro, stuff like that. So we go down to the North Carolina line. So, been very busy here lately. Our swift water teams and stuff over the past, couple years have been, very busy. I'm very proud of how our folks train and the work that they do on both sides. The hazmat team has come a really long way, from just, needing people to support them and what's going on. And the IFF has been a really good partner, in that, in getting our hazmat technicians squared away, and Virginia Department of Emergency Management has been great with helping with that. And our USAR team, man, just doing incredible stuff. Just loading up, do just swift water. Like I said, the swift water has been super busy, but the guys have really gotten into the tire rescue and just really be we now can I can feel comfortable as the ops chief saying that we are a full service, full delivery department. And when I say that, I mean we don't cover the airport full time anymore because they brought in their own staff, but we do have a Lynchburg Regional Airport that we cover, so we offer ARF. So we are, when I say an all hazards department, we are truly an all hazards, department.
Okay. And does your department do your own transport, or is that something contracted to the
Nope.
city?
So we are trans, we are a transporting, agency, as well. I tell our folks all the time, I didn't grow up transporting. But it's something if I could do different, I probably would. And the reason why is the funny thing is you learn in these different services if you're doing it right. Our medic units actually have the greatest propensity to catch a fire than, than sometimes our fire engines. I say that our medic units are always out grazing calls because, they're transporting somebody to the hospital, they head back to the station. But we equip our medic units with every medic unit has Seek thermal imagers. And when I say the Seek thermal imagers, every air pack on our medic units have each provider on there has a Seek Fire Pro 300 on their air pack. So our expectation is this: medic units have real sets of irons, they have pro bars, hooks. So whatever you pull up to, if you're on the medic unit and you pull up and the truck company's there working, you have the ability to become a part of that crew. You already have your thermal imagers, you have hooks and irons that you can get. And you know how to throw ladders and do all of those things. So you can our medic units are ready to do anything, and they are having a ball because they, these medic units are catching fires.
Okay.
Left and right, because they're already in the street.
Right.
So, they're pulling up, giving size ups, getting ready for search. They got their water cans, they got their hooks, they got their thermal imagers. So, like I said, the expectation is this. Somebody asked me when I first got to Lynchburg what my idea of transitional attack was. And so, excuse me to the listeners, but I'm gonna be very frank. I said, transition your ass from your seat into your gear into the seat of the fire. That's my idea of transitional, attack. You have clothing and you have the ability to do things and take care of people in a manner that they don't. So I don't care if you're on a medic unit, if there's somebody trapped, my expectation is very simple. If you're there for the first 2 or 3 minutes by yourself, there's a lot of fire that 2.5 gallon can put out. Get to work. Our job is to get to the folks that don't have the luxury and the comfort to wear the cool things that we wear. Get in there, get them out, so that's our job. And don't, obviously make educated decisions, but again, I still the culture is we are there for them. And it can't be talked about, it has to be demonstrated.
Okay. And what does your first alarm assignment consist of for a within the city of Lynchburg structural box?
So for just a single family residential fire, you get three engines, a truck, a heavy rescue, and you get two chiefs. If it's a multi-dwelling or commercial, you get four engines, both ladder trucks, the heavy rescue, and the chiefs. And you're probably going to get me and the fire chief coming out, just to, to have some additional eyes. If it's a high rise, we automatically bang, six, we're pretty much dump the city. If it's a high rise, because it's just, I mean, just the reflex time that it takes to get to a floor and investigate and do all those other things. So we pretty much dump the city when it comes to that.
Okay. Now that you are deputy chief and have been in that role, is it everything you thought it would be?
No. Not at all. Some things that I would do different, is I would 100% take a longer time to assess. Being an outsider, I would definitely take a longer time to assess the organization, and not jump so quickly to, sometimes things that you perceive to be a problem, really aren't. There just may need to be some adjustments or some training. Always address any actual safety issue right away. But if I could do it different, I would have taken some more time to assess the department a little bit longer, and a little more thoughtfully. That would be my advice to anybody that's in a role like mine where you're looking at operations. Just unless it's illegal, unsafe, or immoral. Take your time, build. I'd work a little bit. I like to think that I built good relationships, but when you sit back and you're honest and you reflect on certain things, take a little more time to cultivate certain relationships and do a better job at that. Nothing, I mean, I'm work, work on that now, but just on the front end about building relationships, learning who people are, what they really, I was a very much, okay, let's get in here and get this done. And I do it different.
You ruffled some feathers,
Yeah.
like,
Oh, yeah.
it's a learning curve.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I want to ask this question to you, and if you don't feel comfortable answering it, that just let me know. Just say you plead the fifth, okay? But you and I both know, coming into this profession, the fire service is predominantly white. Like, when I talk to whenever we go out to schools or we go into a neighborhood where the demographics resemble people of my complexion, sometimes you get asked questions. Oh, hey, man, what does it take to be a firefighter? What do you guys do? What do you see? And when you break it down and you tell them, most of the time it's, no, nah, all right, I'm not doing that shit. Like, that's cool. I appreciate you, blah, blah, whatever it is, right? So, my question to you is, with you being a deputy chief of operations for a large department, do you feel any pressure holding that title and that rank, and on top of it, having the complexion skin color that you do?
So that's actually a great question, and I'm glad you asked it. I didn't know we would get to that, but I'm super awesome. I'm glad you asked it. I feel an obligation, and the obligation that I feel is because this is such a rewarding profession. I feel that our culture, meaning Black culture, has sometimes taken things and opportunities away from other Blacks by this false narrative of what being Black actually is. Being Black is being human. Being Black is being of the original people of this earth. So everything is of us and to some degree from us. That is no disrespect. I don't want anybody, sending. Sometimes people get crazy, get their feelings hurt, stuff like that. What I mean is, factually proven, it was an Aborigine found somewhere in Egyptian or Egypt or somewhere like that. But it was a person of dark skin descent, or at least of a darker descent, that was one of the first people on Earth. It really bothers me, and I do find a sense of obligation to tell other Black Americans about the greatness of the fire service, about the opportunity that they're missing out to serve in the fire service and to serve our community. It really intrigues me when people get upset and they say, they, and to me, I kind of consider this racist. Well, those white boys don't treat us right when they come in our house. Well, here's a question I ask. What did you do to change that? And so what I mean by that is, those white boys ain't do nothing you didn't allow to be done because you didn't apply for the job. You've never taken an interest, in the job. And it's just like a lot of Black folks that end up in this profession end up loving it, and they're like, I never knew. And if I would have listened to, this person, I would have never. Exactly. Just be human and follow your interest. Just follow your interest. It ain't a Black, it ain't a white thing. It's not a color thing. It's a service thing. Does your heart have a desire to serve? And then you just have to figure out your method of service. Some people are police officers, some people are firefighters, but what is your method of service? But I do believe it's within our own ethnicity, sorry, having trouble speaking now. It's within our own culture that causes the lack of firefighters because we choose to be segregated. And then some firefighters choose that when they get to certain positions, and this is something that is a subculture problem within Black culture, we have this classism. Like, I'm a Black chief officer, I'm a Black executive, and then we have a lack of Black executives that want to interact with firefighters like you. Well, shit, I'm a chief, so I ain't got to talk to him. Bullshit. Excuse me.
No, you're good. You're good.
Here's my thing. No, I owe you. I owe you to tell you my stories, just like people like John Austin, I. David Daniels, Ernie Mitchell, Ernest Malone, Lenny Carmichael, Aaron Kinney, those guys that came before me, just a few names. That they give me their time, they give me their ear. My best buddy, like my brother Jake Jenkins, who is down. I mean, these guys that came before us have sat down and talked to me. I owe this conversation to you, Danny, and anybody else that looks like us that would listen. They got to get off of the race thing and get on the service thing. Yeah,
For
you're gonna
sure.
have some struggle. Shit, everybody have struggle.
Everybody struggles. That's a
So
fact.
I'm saying, and I know that we have a very similar family dynamic, something that makes our job even harder. Because if you don't believe being in an interracial marriage, this some motherfuckers mad with you. They are.
Oh, I know.
No.
I had two chiefs in my department did not come to my wedding because I married a white woman. But you know what? That's their damn problem.
No, it's it's something that it's I keep it in the back of my mind. So I could tell you if people were to come work with me and when we're on the trucks and we're going to calls and we're coming back from calls or whatever we're doing, like the way we joke, HR would be like, bro. And I'm meaning the way I joke, like because we can be responding to a certain call. And you know we all wear the headsets, and I the whole crew knows. I'm like, hey, if I was a betting man, I'm gonna say that the person that responded to is white, and then they're gonna be like, and then they'll be like, why? And I'll be like, because it's a call where the caller is in the woods and they're hunting or something like that. Like, very many brothers ain't hunting out here, right? Like,
Right.
so, but like, we laugh, and I get a laugh out of all of them, but they all know. Like, I make fun of it because. This day and age, man, the world is so everybody's at each other's throats.
Crazy.
Democrats, Republicans, liberals, Trump supporters, Biden support, like it's disgusting. And like we tend to lose sight of the main thing you said, the human. We're all human. Doesn't matter what color, gender you are, we are all human. We all have the same feelings, the same emotions. And it's just like, so that's my way of like breaking bread, breaking ice. And so, you know, like with my firefighters in the back, they might joke and they might say something to me, but it doesn't offend me because it's like, all right, if they can joke with me like that, then we understand each other. But they also know like there is a line that should never be crossed. And I know that as well. But it's just the fact that I don't meet very many chief officers of my color. And I get it because if you look at the fire service as a whole, it's predominantly white, which I understood that coming into the service. Like I understood it. But yes, there are people though, I will say that they may be your friend in front of you, but you never know what they say behind you. And so I will say I didn't go out seeking for a white woman. That's not
Right.
how it worked for me. Like,
Right.
what, the funny
You
thing
found
is,
somebody to love.
that's
You found
right.
somebody that loved you. And
That's
you
right.
said, shit, I love you. You love me. Let's, we sound like
Right.
a bar. It sounds like Barney right now, but I love you. You love me. Let's go out and make a family.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So please understand, and I want people to hear this. Get off if you are a black firefighter and you're not making the investment to be a better firefighter, and you're using the excuse that you are it's because you're black. Get off that shit, because don't we ain't on the same type of time. You find a reason to continue to do. I can tell you how many roles I've been taken off, how many opportunities have been taken away from me, and guess what? I keep coming back. And I'm gonna keep showing up for more. And I'll tell you the same thing at any other firefighter. You do not have an excuse to subscribe to mediocrity because of the color of your skin. That should empower you and embolden you to do more and to be better for you and for anybody watching you. And I'm not talking about people watching you for wrong. I'm talking about the other little black boys and girls in the neighborhood that sees you. You have a responsibility to them. Each one is to teach one, or is to reach one to teach one.
I
It's
love it.
just straight up.
Yeah,
I
no.
don't, my greatest, one of my greatest mentors, and I love him to death, and I think everybody knows Chief John Austin. We don't do excuses. If you do an excuse, you find an excuse to do. You find an excuse to be better. We own whatever mistakes, that we make. We don't always throw out this race card and stuff. Because yeah, people do it. Don't I mean, nah. Sometimes it ain't about race. Sometimes you just screwed up, and you just have to be an adult and say, I screwed up,
Thanks.
and I'm gonna do better, and I'm going to be better. Ain't got nothing to do with race.
That's
There are
right.
times where race comes into play, but it's actually more seldom than not.
Yes. Yes.
And I don't, the political spectrum, I'll be honest, blacks struggle with me too because I'm an independent, but a lot of my voting leans more Republican. Because it's about understanding. It ain't got nothing to do with race. The founding principles of this country was based on capitalism. Want me to factually prove it? They threw the damn tea in the harbor. It was about money.
Sir.
It wasn't about race.
Yeah. But that's just the way we seem. It just seems like that's what everybody wants to cry wolf about. And like you said, not saying it doesn't happen. I guarantee there are parts of this country where that does exist. But for the
Absolutely.
most part, in 2025, it's all about who you are, how you carry yourself, what your last name brings. And to me, it's always work ethic. So, which is why I always say, whenever I meet a firefighter of my color, it's like, hey man, congratulations, glad you're on. Cool. Blindly, bluntly stated, please don't fuck this up.
What are you gonna do with it?
Yeah.
That's the thing too, is like we have, I'm only speaking on our culture because I don't, I'm not in any other culture. We had this attitude, well, shit, I'm gonna go to work, but if them motherfuckers ask me to go to class and they ain't paying for it, they ain't, well, guess what? If you read successful people's books, one of the people I can think of, Charlemagne the God. He talks about how he volunteered at a damn paid radio station because to get where he wasn't getting a paycheck to get to where he needed to get. We have these negative mindsets and assumptions that you gonna have to do some shit you don't really want to do what you really want to be able to do. And like you said, it's just the work ethic. It ain't got nothing to do with color. Either you prepared to do it, you prepared to work. Or you're not. You either go shit or get off the pot.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. I want to talk about culture and followership. You mentioned that that was something you definitely wanted to hit on.
So here's the thing. Everybody talks about, leadership, leadership, leadership. I can keep this very plain for folks. If you don't know how to follow, if you can't take an order, and this is more so for leaders because quote unquote leaders need to learn that there's a point in being a leader that you need to learn how to follow as well, or that you have to be a follower. And I'm gonna state this very plainly because if you're sitting at a table where you are the smartest individual at the table, you at the wrong darn table. I got some really smart cats that work for me. And I listen to them emphatically because they've invested themselves in the respective areas. They have proven themselves that they have earned the right through how they work and how they research and do what they do. They have deserved to be heard. And I love that I can say collaboratively, we are a smart group. But I'm not the smartest individual at the table. Part of that is because I realize that there's no way in hell you could know everything. But I also surround myself by people who I know invest themselves in topics and things that I just don't even have the bandwidth or ability to delve into. But there are so many leaders. That and they are leaders. We just all have faults. They're leaders, so I don't take nothing away from them. But they just need to understand if you always have the best idea, then again, you will have surrounded yourself with the wrong darn people.
Okay. Enough said. Enough said.
That sums up culture too.
Yeah. For sure. Okay. I always like to ask the guests, where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up?
What I want to do is I want to be able to help the folks that I work with to cultivate an organization that continues in a positive manner to reimagine itself appropriately. That means it never gets complacent. We're always working on progress, with the understanding that we are striving for perfection. And it may be unattainable, but we're always making progress. We're always reimagining. We're always reevaluating ourselves. And that is with a positive affirmation to tradition. Tradition is not a bad thing, not at all. Tradition is only bad when you don't challenge it. I heard John Salka say this, and this is what made it click. He says, "What's wrong with tradition?" He says, "Why we do what we do in the FDNY? Because we keep testing our, we keep, when there were new ideas or new things come out, we test those new ideals against what we do now. And if that works better than what we're doing, if it's like really more efficient, then we change. If it's really not that much more efficient, then we don't change." And people need to understand that. That's the FDNY, the Chicagos, those places work to reimagine themselves. But what they find is through copious amounts of testing that the things that they do, a lot of them are tried and true. And they do make necessary changes where it's necessary to change. What folks need to understand is sometimes people come up with a new tactic just because they don't have the work ethic to become proficient in what's out there. Oh, I'm gonna try to make this easier. Now, how about instead of just doing 2 reps of something and saying it's hard, how about you do 10 reps and it becomes a lot easier? Yeah. How about you do 20 reps?
Yeah. Hey, and the crazy thing is, it's not really rocket science. Like what we do, because sometimes when the community watches us and we go to schools and things like that, you'll hear them say like, what you guys do is hard. To an extent, it is at first, but the more you keep practicing, the more reps you get, the faster you obtain the skill, the faster you get the knowledge of understanding the skill. This, and I've heard a lot of other people say, this job is really fun when you're good at it. The ones who don't like it are the ones who just aren't good at it because they don't take the time and effort to put in that work.
And to be honest, I can guarantee you, with most organizations, when they don't do that, they're violating their core values of the organization. At the Lynchburg Fire Department, our core values, honesty, integrity, trust, and compassion. Let me tell you this. You can take the H, the T, and the C out. If you don't have the integrity, you violated every other. And part of being integral is bringing your butt to work every day. If you're on an engine company, you said you want to go to a fire every day. So why you have a problem stretching a line during training? Why you got a problem laying a line during training? You said you want to go to a fire. So what's the difference? You own a truck company. Why aren't you putting up ground ladders or setting up fans or working on ventilation or you're on a rescue company. Why aren't you making sure your 3-to-1 is good, or you know how to do your pickoffs, whatever it is that you need to do. You're saying the integral part of it is preparing yourself and getting better every day. Simply playing, we're making progress. May not attain perfection, but we're making progress every day. That's the integral part. The other integral part is treating everybody just like you want to be treated. Giving
Great.
your coworker the same benefit of the doubt that you would want.
Absolutely.
It's
Okay.
just
No, I get it. It's not hard. It really isn't. But just we all know those or some who make it hard. But it's really not a hard thing to do. Marcus, I appreciate you really coming on. I thank you for accepting the phone call, not thinking it was a scam. Because you know, I when I call certain people, they're like, "Hello, who is this? How'd you get my number?" And I'm like, "Well, hold. If you let me explain, sir, I will get to that point." But I appreciate you accepting the phone call. I appreciate Alex Matthews for sending me the message. And you know this already because when I called you, I told you how I got your number. So obviously, individuals out there. And here's the thing too. My last point with when I call individuals. I call individuals because another person has contacted me that's like, "Hey, I have a person for you." So obviously, with what you've done, what you continue doing, it just goes to show you that people are watching you, whether you know it or not.
Yeah, you blew my mind, and I'm honored. I really am, because it's an honor to be able to share this time. It's an honor to be able to give my opinion and give my thoughts. And don't worry, we're definitely going to keep in touch. I'm going to give you some names and some numbers of some people that I know. Their perspective really needs to to be shared. There are some firefighters and some chief officers that are doing just some really good things. They don't want any type of notoriety at all, but it's just the things that they do to better people, to better their organizations, and to better their communities. I think you really enjoy speaking with them as well. So, but you have my number. This is an absolute pleasure, and I'm going to do my best to make sure I stay in touch, with you. But as anybody can tell you, just like when you call me, I picked up the phone. If you need a voice, somebody just to listen, I can listen. And that's what you have to tell me at the beginning, because I'm a natural talker. So you have to say, "Hey, I just called a vent. Like, I ain't
Yeah.
called for no advice. I just called a vent. Like, I
Right.
got friends that do that, and I know just to be quiet." But if you call me and say, "Hey, man, I need you to hear me out, but then I need some advice." I just had I consider him my brother, but he always says he's my mentee. One of my mentees called me the other day and just laid it on me. And I heard him out, and then I said, "Hey, these are I always lead from where I made mistakes." See, that's the thing we can't be afraid of. The mistakes are the general to true growth. Mistakes are the general to true growth, and you have to make mistakes to get better. That's something the fire service needs to understand. Fail in training so that when you get out to that performance, you don't have to regret, "Oh, I should have did this, I should have did that." That's why I say don't drill all the time. Drills are for culmination and for understanding of and it's for evaluation of where we need to be or what we need to do. But if we're training and we're creating those opportunities and we're creating those safe spaces for firefighters to try things, to fail, to get better, but understanding that they're going to be celebrated for taking those risks, they're going to be celebrated for doing those things, and in the end, for them, it's better for everybody, because we all need each other. We're all interdependent.
Love it. I love it. I like I said, Chief, I appreciate you coming on, laying the gospel down on certain topics within the fire service. So with that, I want to say thank you for your time for doing this.
But I really appreciate it. Like I said, please, keep my number, hit me up. We talked a little bit offline. I'm not gonna bring, that kind of stuff up. But if there's something that, that I can do, in the area, or if I can be, helpful any type of way. I'm not out on the, speaking circuit or any of those things. But if I get invited somewhere, it's likely I'll show up.
All right, Chief. You have a good rest of your day.
You too, brother. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
See you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.